Next matter is the adoption of GV. Voorhees.
Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the Court. Feels like I can just continue with what I was saying.
We get another go at you, too, huh?
Yeah. And it is the same. It is the same thing. And I can start right with the due process. And it's exactly what I was saying at the end of the last case. Parenting requires a commitment to the child, and for an unwed birth father, the opportunity to parent requires the commitment to the child. So we've discussed in the prior case the Iowa Revised Code, what that requires. The responsibility of the birth father begins with the moment that he has sex with a woman that he's not married to. His obligation, his responsibility, continues through the pregnancy. 3107.07b2 puts that obligation on the birth father. Once the child's born, he has an obligation to register within 30 days. Then what does that do? The registration, not timely registration, entitles him to notice of any adoption proceeding relating to the child.
And the question I have is that the Court of Appeals stated that the father had timely registered.
He did.
So your arguments in the first case don't seem to apply here.
They absolutely apply, Your Honor, and if I can explain
why. So if you register in one case, you're done. If you don't register in the other case, you're done. I mean, you're like,
absolutely not. He is entitled to. This birth father registered. He also filed his objection in the probate court, which he's required to do, and he showed up.
And he also filed a petition to establish parental relief and rights in juvenile court.
Correct.
Okay.
However, here's the problem in this case. They totally disregarded the obligation that he had to the birth mother during the pregnancy. He has a responsibility not to willfully abandon the birth mother during her pregnancy, and he also has a responsibility to the child to not abandon that child.
So just registering as a putative father is no longer sufficient?
It never has been. It entitles him to notice. He is a party now to the adoption proceeding.
So what do you do if you have a mother who says, I don't want your help and I don't want anything to do with you? And so he registers on the putative registry.
Yes.
Files in juvenile court because he would like to have some involvement in this child's life.
Yes.
And she files for adoption saying he never supported me.
Yes.
What happens then?
You have a trial on that issue. That's what's missing in this case.
What is the legal standard the trial adheres to because he did not contribute to the mother during pregnancy?
Absolutely. You have an issue. Did he willfully abandon the birth mother during the pregnancy? If that is proven after a hearing, then his consent's not required. That is exactly what's missing in this case. And let's get back to due process. The whole law in putative father regarding putative father started with a due process case in the U.S. Supreme Court, Stanley versus Illinois. Ohio protects the due process rights of a birth father that's interested. If he wants to, he can register. If he wants to contest the adoption, he can file an objection. However, what the part that's missing in this case are the due process rights of everyone else. And by everyone else, I mean the birth mother, the legal father that signed the surrender, the adoptive parents that have a right to have this case heard, and the child. This ignores the due process rights of the child to this adoption, to this permanent home. When I was thinking about this case, this is such a serious due process violation that what the courts have done is they have elevated the birth father's rights, who are properly protected in this case, over everyone else.
Mr. Voorhees, there are no constitutional issues raised before this court. Is that correct?
Correct.
Let's talk for a moment about Pushkar.
Okay.
I guess if I understood the argument that you made in the previous case, you were not asking the court to overrule Pushkar. Would that be true, and is that true in this case as well?
I actually think Pushkar was wrong. But in this case and in the prior case, it simply does not apply. However, the holding that I read, the logic of that, you can't apply to this case because it uses the words judicial ascertainment of paternity, which was clearly in both cases done after the adoptions already filed. Also, the logic and the standard of looking at the plain meaning of the provisions applies, and the requirements of due process. So you can take I don't think Pushkar applies in any way whatsoever.
So there's no need for this court to consider whether to overrule Pushkar.
You don't need to. You don't need to because it doesn't apply. It's an A case, not a B case.
And what about Sunderhaus? It's a case that Pushkar is based on in part. Does Sunderhaus have any relevance to this case?
Absolutely not. And if you read Sunderhaus and you read Pushkar and you read what they were really about, they were really about starting that one-year statute. Because what this court has said, you have to have, based on due process rights and fairness and plain meaning of the statutes, if you're going to apply the one-year statute of failure to support, failure to communicate, you got to have a starting point. And that's not in either one of my cases today.
In this case, again, making sure that the facts are in agreement, the putative father registers 17 days after the child's born, within the 30 days. You don't disagree with that. Files within 2 months a parenting action. Within that year.
Yes.
18 days later, the parents file a petition to adopt. And the probate court says, let the parenting action go forward first. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with letting the parenting act? Whose rights are really violated? The father wants to be involved. This is like the death penalty for the father if you let this go forward. He says he wants to be involved. You may dispute that all you want, but he took legal action. And all the court of appeals says is let that action be determined first, and if it's proved that he shouldn't get custody, he shouldn't have any involvement in this child, then you go forward with the adoption. Or you wait for the 1 year and see if he actually does it, and then you go forward with the adoption.
You're ignoring a few facts, Your Honor, if I might.
Okay. Let me slow up.
Okay. The child was placed at birth by the birth mother and the legal father.
Right.
The placement occurred through an agency, Ohio agency, with the adoptive parents who were at the hospital. They provided care for this child from day one.
By gentle care, correct?
The process required ICPC approval. That occurred. So before birth father took any action whatsoever, this child was in an adoptive placement that was ICPC approved in the state of Indiana.
But he registered 17 days later.
Correct.
Okay. Within 2 months, he got himself an attorney, filed an action.
Absolutely.
Correct? Now, you're still doing the race to the courthouse if you say because they got their ICP placement first, he's out of luck.
No, Your Honor. I am 100% against a race to the courthouse, and I'll tell you why. It's because you have a defined adoption process that's clearly defined. And then what was missing in this case is he abandoned the birth mom during her pregnancy. I mean, it is overwhelming evidence that he did. He did not meet his commitment.
Can he establish paternity while she's pregnant?
In some states you can. I don't think you can in Ohio.
So he couldn't have done it only 17 days earlier than he did it, right? But he did it 17 days after the child was born, correct? He
registered, Your Honor.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Registering with the putative file registry means he is entitled to notice of the adoption proceeding. So he is a party. It files an objection with the adoption.
And then he went to the probate court to get an adjudication as quickly as he could. He got a lawyer and he got it filed and it was pending.
But paternity has...
How quickly would you have him get the juvenile court to give him that adjudication?
Well, Your
Honor, after the birth of the child.
It's not relevant. I'll tell you why.
What's not relevant?
The paternity action's not relevant. And again, you are ignoring his obligations during the pregnancy. That is the problem with this case.
Let me ask you about his obligations during the pregnancy. What are the facts here? What was the relationship with this woman, the sire of this child?
The facts that I wasn't allowed to present in the probate court, Your Honor, is that what you're asking me?
We don't have any record at all?
That's the problem. I never got a day in court.
Well, what we do have a record of is she married to somebody else.
Yes, and they were separated. They were separated.
Is that in the record?
Yes. Yes. And the... Well, I can't get into those. That's the whole problem. I can't tell you the facts because they're not in the record. That's the whole problem.
But you're telling us he ignored his obligations, so you are telling us the facts.
Yes.
You're wanting us to assume a record that isn't present, that he ignored his obligations to a woman that was married to another man.
Your Honor, what I want to, the record clearly reflects, we never got a chance to present that case. If we had the chance to present that case, then the probate court could have found that we did not need the consent of this birth father.
So what rule of law are we to write, and where are we to send this case in your view of a perfect world?
Remand it to the probate court so I can have a hearing on the consent of this putative father. Then I can present the case that he willfully abandoned the birth mother during her pregnancy, as in the statute, clearly in the statute, and also failed to support and care for the child.
And your later filed probate case trumps the already existing juvenile case.
Well, that's an issue. Your Honor, that's an issue. Again, it has no relevance. You're not following the clear adoption procedures and process set forth in the Ohio Revised Code.
And does our jurisprudence that the first case filed has priority have any jurisprudence?
No. And
okay.
you're talking about the Sente.
All right.
Let me explain. I was involved in the Sente. I wrote an amicus brief for the Kentucky Supreme Court. The issue in a Sente was the adoption process was taking place in Kentucky. They had hearings. They had a termination proceeding. It was part of the adoption process. And Ohio said, this court said, well, we're not touching it because the adoption process is still going on. In this case, a filing of paternity is not part of the adoption process. Once you file that adoption petition, and in this case even further, because you have a child in the permanent custody of an Ohio agency that has made an adoptive placement that's approved by both the agency and both the ICPC office of Ohio and the ICPC office of Indiana. And this child has been supervised for all these years, in that every month for all these years.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a clarification question.
Your Honor, if I might, I would like to reserve my time. So can I have the 2 minutes at the end?
That would be up to the Chief Justice. But my clarification question is, in either situation, whether the juvenile court ruled on paternity or you followed the probate, the biological father in this case is going to have an opportunity to participate in the proceedings. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Either way.
Absolutely.
Right. The only question is whether or not the determination is going to be that the putative father has willfully abandoned or failed to care or support the minor, which would occur in the adoption proceeding, or if the person has been determined to be the father, so is no longer putative father, then the probate court has to look at a one-year period. So we're talking about a longer period. So that is essentially the difference, is it not, whether you're going to do it leading up to the look at leading up to the adoption, or whether you're going to wait for 1 year and essentially make the same determination.
Yeah, two different cases, two different standards. Putative father is defined separately. Father's defined separately.
But in either case, the biological father will have an opportunity. In either case, in order to cut off the consent, the proponent of the adoption is going to have to prove that either the putative father willfully abandoned, or that the biological father, as determined by the juvenile court, failed to adequately provide. Is that not correct? Before consent is cut off.
Absolutely.
So we're talking essentially about whether we wait another year or not is the difference in this matter.
Well, I think a policy...
I'm not saying that's insignificant. Yeah. I'm just... That is the legal difference, is it not?
That is the legal... And, Your Honor, that raises a very important policy point, is the permanency of this child.
Okay, I was just getting to clarify what the difference
is. Right.
Because it seems as maybe this discussion has gone...
You have a well-defined
field here.
Yeah, Your Honor, you have a well-defined adoption process. You have an infant placed voluntarily placed by the birth mother with my clients, and I never ever got a day in court to prove that the birth father's consent was not required under this specific statute that absolutely applies. And I don't know how you can read this with the plain meaning of the statute
and you might
get
not
around
be
that.
Able to prove that it wasn't required because it
Correct.
Says willfully abandoned. And if a child is in the care of some other agency, it may not have been possible for the father to support and care for the minor child.
No, Your Honor, I'm talking about the abandonment, initially the abandonment of the birth mother during pregnancy as required by Ohio law.
But, counsel, was the birth mother involved with an agency at the time? During the pregnancy, was she involved with this agency that placed the child?
Towards the end of her pregnancy.
And they supported her?
Supported her in what way?
Did they offer any financial support to her
No.
during the pregnancy?
Absolutely nothing, zero.
She was responsible solely for her own support during the pregnancy?
Yes, she's a nurse, she supports... And the issues that I didn't get into because it's not in the record is he willfully abandoned her.
Ms. DeVries, let me just ask one question with respect to one of the consequences. If we adopt what I think is your position, that the statutes are clear and that this status determination is required at the time of filing the petition for adoption, does this father... Who does not have a right to notice and who does not have a right with respect to the consent question, does that person have a right to participate in the probate court proceeding with respect to best interest?
Are you talking about this case, Your Honor?
No.
Okay. You're talking about the other?
Talking about the hypothetical where the biological father has had involvement with the child, but has not availed himself of any of the statutory means of establishing his right to notice and consent.
Right.
Does that person, get to go to probate court, and in the best interest hearing, does he have a right to participate to present his relationship as factoring into best interest?
No.
Mr.
Not a party to the he's not under 3107.11. He is not a party to the adoption proceeding. If he is, he does. Then he's met his commitment. He's allowed to be there. He's allowed to dispute the arguments made. If he doesn't do any of that, then we're talking about permanency for a child, stable home, all those issues. The statute makes sense. The policy makes sense. And a child can't wait forever. So if he doesn't meet those rights which are there, and doesn't have the right to be a party to the adoption proceeding, then this court in the Jacques case said, then we should not listen to what he thinks where the best interests lie.
Thank you.
Has this child been with your clients since the birth?
From the hospital.
Pardon me?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's almost 3 years?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lennonbauer?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Ohio Supreme Court, on behalf of Benjamin Weirenbeck, we respectfully request that you uphold the decisions made by the Lucas County Probate Court and the Sixth District Court of Appeals. By upholding these decisions, you will continue to follow the long-standing history of the Ohio courts in recognizing the constitutional rights of natural parents to raise and nurture their children. The right of natural parent to the care and custody of his children is one of the most precious and fundamental in the law. And before we get too far, one of the things I want to clarify is that the record does not reflect abandonment of the birth mother during pregnancy by Mr. Weirenbeck. Although there wasn't a record made, we would strongly oppose that issue if that ever came to a hearing.
Mr. Lennonbauer, isn't there a statutory mechanism in place for your client to assert his interests, to have asserted his interests timely and to prevent the adoption?
There is a mechanism in place, and that's one of the questions that has come up, obviously, in this particular proceeding.
How is that mechanism insufficient?
The mechanism creates a disparity between two individuals who become treated differently because of their loss of the race to the courthouse, in effect. If you construe Revised Code 3107.01H3, first of all, you need to examine Revised Code 1.47, where it's presumed that the legislature did not intend to create an unjust and an unfair result in their legislation, nor create two classes of individuals, nor to create an unconstitutional standard. This statute that the appellants want you to apply in this particular circumstance would clearly be a violation of Mr. Weirenbeck's rights of equal protection. As I indicated, it treats individuals differently that are in a similar situation. If he would have had a cooperative birth mother who allowed him to sign an acknowledgement of parentage, he wouldn't be in the position under 3107.01H3 and 3107.07. He did everything possible that he could. He filed, or he got on the registry in a timely fashion, and then he also filed the action in the juvenile court seeking not only a parentage determination, but also a determination of custody of this child.
Does your client have visitation rights with this child?
Presently, my client has a custody order from the Lucas County Juvenile Court naming him primary residential parent and legal custodian of this child. We're in the process of trying to enforce that order.
Has he seen the child in the last 3 years?
Yes. There was visitations that were arranged by the Lucas County Juvenile Court. And again, this isn't in the record, but there were visitations that were arranged that he did comply to the extent he was allowed to by the prospective adoptive parents.
So you have a scenario here, unlike the first one, where the mother remarried and the new husband wanted to adopt the child. Here, the mother doesn't want to keep the child, is giving up the child for adoption. You have a natural parent who wants to keep the child, has asked for custody. Are there policy considerations here where you do have a natural parent that would want to keep the child, that interplay at all?
Well, yes. I mean, the policy implications, we believe, you know, one, that obviously it's important for a natural parent to have that right to be able to raise their own child. The policy considerations would strengthen the institution of adoption by not cutting off a parent who tries to become involved in this process. In this particular case, the record does reflect that the birth mother did anything and everything to try to cut off Mr. Weirenbeck from the child's life. The record does reflect, there was a filing in the court, that initially she lied to the domestic relations court because this child was conceived during her marriage, during the final hearing in her divorce, she was specifically asked if she was pregnant. She denied the pregnancy, or this matter would have never made it this far. Secondarily, the prospective adoptive couple of this child have done everything and anything to try to delay Mr. Weirenbeck's establishment of his parental rights. This case represents the fifth filing in this court alone relative to this particular child.
Mr. Lennonbauer, what if we were to rule against you in this particular case? The request was to have this remanded to the probate court for a determination of whether the putative father needs to give consent to the adoption. I mean, you still would have the potential of prevailing at that level. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, I mean, your client still has the possibility if, in fact, there is a full-blown trial. As you said, the record is not complete here, and the parties dispute what the facts are.
That is correct.
Okay.
There would be a hearing on that issue. And the question became, at the time that of this filing, is what section of the revised code applied? Was it the one-year provision because he took steps to establish paternity prior to the filing of the petition for adoption? Or should the strangers to this child be allowed to cut off his rights and limit it, and limit the circumstances, limit the evidence that can be presented relative to this situation?
And, so, and the burden, as you say, is on the strangers to prove that he willfully abandoned either the mother or the child.
That's correct. Yeah. And I think, again, you would envision the same scenario where somebody gets on the registry, that there is no filing for a number of years, you know, is evidence lost during that time period? And if the person at that point in time takes steps to establish themselves and to have a legal relationship with their child, should they be held to a lesser standard for something that applied either a short time ago or long ago, you know, in that situation? As indicated, I think, in the previous case, though, this case also could have far-reaching implications in Ohio because of the statistics that are out there. The government statistics show that over 40% of the births in Ohio now are to unmarried mothers. In the United States alone, I think it's 1.6 million births per year to unmarried mothers.
Counsel, in resolving this case and writing on it, what specifically would you have us say, and what is there anything more that we can do so that you don't have a tragedy like this? You have a husband and wife who have, for 3 years, cared for an infant with whom they conceivably are very, very attached. And you have the natural father who, from the beginning, has said, it's my child and I want the child. Now we're 3 years into it. So now it's a tragedy for everybody, regardless of how we decide this case.
That is
what,
correct.
What specifically should we write, and is there anything that we can do in deciding these cases that would mean a quicker resolution?
Yes, that's an excellent point. I think, you know, the rule of law in this type of case, in my position, would be that where a father does timely file with the putative father registry and also commences a parentage action in a timely fashion prior to an adoption being filed, that, you know, one, that the father then be construed as a father, as a parent, even if a petition for adoption is filed after his parentage proceeding commences. I think the appellants have successfully delayed this process. It took over a year for us to complete the parentage process by the numerous filings that the prospective adoptive couple made.
Mr. Lanbrower, what if the father did not do the 30-day registration but filed a matter in the juvenile court seeking a declaration of as the biological father?
And again, I think if he did file a parentage action, a paternity action in the juvenile court prior to a petition for adoption being filed, that this court should hold that he, you know, the registry issues would not come into play.
We're in a race to the courthouse? Is that what we're doing? We're running to the juvenile court for a declaration of parentage, biological fatherhood, or racing to the probate court to get a determination in connection with the adoption?
The way the appellants would have you construe this statute would create a race to the courthouse. There is no
question about it. How would you have us construe it so it's not a race to the courthouse?
And again, if you timely file on the registry, if you commence a parentage action.
I don't mean to interrupt your answer, but the filing on the registry doesn't seem to me to affect the filing in any court. It's simply, if it's there, then notice has to be provided. But if it's not there, we have litigation that we might engage in.
Correct.
Am I missing something, or is that?
No, I think your point is well taken. I think, you know, one, if you didn't get on the registry, you know, there's some significant legal consequences that may apply if you don't take some action.
Right. And so if you take action in the juvenile court, how do we avoid the race then, either to the juvenile court or to the probate court?
At that point in time, you know, for the natural father, if it's the case, that wants to be involved in the child's life, I believe he's required, pursuant to the statutory scheme, to take some step, especially if he did not get on the registry.
And counsel, if he had gotten on the registry and then the adoption was filed and then the father who was on the registry went over to juvenile court to get a declaration of paternity, and what would your, hypothetically, where would you be on that scenario?
I think in Push, based on the decision in Pushkar, that the probate proceedings would still be stayed for a determination of the parentage proceeding, the custody action, based on my interpretation of Pushkar.
Counsel, I'm interested also in a practical application. If you prevail and your client is awarded custody of the child, that's what your client is seeking, right?
He has been awarded custody of this child.
Then the family that has raised this child to that point would never have any visitation right in the future? Is that correct?
It's not necessarily correct.
Is there a way for the trial court to award some visitation or some rights to someone who has invested that amount of effort in the child?
They would be allowed to petition the juvenile court to try to establish some.
And within its plenary powers, then the court could make such an award.
Correct.
And the mother who sought to terminate her relationship is back in.
That's correct.
And is liable for support.
Correct.
And could have visitation.
Correct.
And could ultimately flip custody back to herself.
Correct.
Okay.
I have an additional question on docketing. We regularly require trial courts to conclude certain types of cases within established guidelines. Are there such guidelines for these kinds of cases in the juvenile court? And if so, do we need to look at that?
I mean, they attempt to keep these on the forefront of their docket, but as you indicated, this, you know, Lucas County is one of the larger counties. Their docket is quite crowded, and it is difficult to get matters scheduled.
Is there an established guideline within which a juvenile court should make a determination in a case like this?
That I'm not sure on at this point in time.
Thank you.
I think the additional point, you know, that I would like to make before concluding here is that the record also establishes that the probate and appellate decisions were correct for several other reasons. Even if a judgment being reviewed on appeal is right for any reason, then the decision must be affirmed. As previously set forth, we believe that Revised Code 3107-OH3 has some serious constitutional issues. But additionally, the record does reflect that the adoption was required to be dismissed for other reasons, including the fact that the permanent surrenders filed in this case were invalid. The surrender that was provided by Jovan Bakvarov, he states specifically in the surrender that he is not the biological father of this child. He did not have custody of the child, and the mother indicated on her form that she was a single parent. As set forth in this court's decision in Adoption Link versus Suver, that surrender is of no validity. The fact that adoption by general care basically improperly took this child to begin with.
Counsel, has that issue, this last one that you raised, been determined by any other court?
Not at this point in time. There was a included in the probate filings were declaratory judgment action as to the constitutionality of these particular statutes, although the court didn't rule on that, and declaratory actions relative to the permanent surrenders.
Thank you, Mr. Lanebauer. Mr. Voorhees, 1 minute.
Just quickly, a few things. The United States Supreme Court in Lair versus Robinson stated that the mere existence of a biological link does not merit equivalent constitutional protection. The putative father does not have parental rights. He has certain due process rights that are protected. So there is no question that the Ohio Vice Code is constitutional and the whole adoption process is legitimate, constitutional, and if so, this court must give its plain meaning and must follow the law. Your Honor, you talked about how do we avoid a race to the courthouse. You follow the clear statutes. We would not be here today arguing that we didn't get a day in court if we got our day in court and he heard the case. So this would have been concluded long ago. Counsel mentioned that his client did everything he did. Well, that's not true. Clearly in the record, I'm making the allegation in the petition and today that he willfully abandoned the birth mother during her pregnancy.
Counsel, he pulled one more rabbit out of the hat right at the end, and that is he said the Court of Appeals opinion should stand if it got the right answer, even if it didn't give the right reasons, and argued that this was not a valid placement, period.
No, it's absolutely, totally, 100% false. The surrenders were valid. They complied with the statutory procedure. It's an argument he made.
A surrender where the person who signs, the male who signs, says, I'm signing this, but I'm not the father.
Your Honor, he's the legal father. He is one of the persons that you have to look at. In an adoption, you have a legal father, and you have to address his what do you do? He has an absolute right to notice. And then the allegation is, and I make this all the time, is that he's not actually the biological father, and that's fine. But you have to address his rights, the legal father.
Okay.
Law requires it. So the agency properly took his surrender. Now, the arguments counsel was making about the name, you know, oftentimes in hospitals, you know, the hospital actually puts the name now. The birth record turned up months later with not the Vaughn name, but the birth mother's last name, or actually the legal father's last name. It's still the same child. And I filed in the probate court before it was dismissed a application to conform all pleadings, and it was not objected to, and the record reflects that everyone understood that, and it was corrected in the record. So that's not an argument.
Thank you, Mr. Voorhees.
Yeah, couple other things.
Mr. Voorhees.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Your time's expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.